Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Saturdays are always wonderful.
Well, yeah. And now we're moving into a shift of seasons. You know, the kids are back into school. And I meant to tell you this. I went to the store. This is no lie. I went to the store, and you were the first person I thought of when I saw this. But I saw the display of Halloween candy out already. I promise.
Oh, my gosh. People are crazy. This is August. It's hot out.
I know.
It's not for Halloween. I mean,
no.
That candy's going to be so old by the time it gets here.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like, wow, August 17th, and there's already Halloween candy. How could this be?
I don't know. Oh, my gosh. Well, let me bring you up on the neighborhood site.
Oh, yeah.
They've got three little Goebbels they need to rehome.
Oh,
they got three little Goebbels, and they're asking for somebody to take their Goebbels.
Oh, boy.
And then the rooster is still on the loose.
Really?
And the neighbors have all seen the rooster, and they're saying, come get your rooster. Oh, my gosh. And they show it. It's a black rooster.
Oh.
And he's on the loose, and they're saying, somebody come get this rooster.
I'm shocked that nobody's claimed their rooster yet.
I am too. I don't know who it belongs to, but it has been on the loose. And then they found two Great Pyrenees dogs, and they're wondering who the owner might be. It showed them in this guy's pickup. He found them. He's looking for the owner, and I can't imagine that the owner doesn't have something on Facebook saying, my precious dogs are missing. I just can't imagine.
You would think that they'd be out looking.
Somebody's a dog got lost the other day, and they've offered a $500 reward.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And his name is Harley, and they want Harley home.
Yeah, clearly. Oh, my.
Yeah, and they've hired a pet detective. I mean, people here are serious about their animals.
I didn't know there was really... Are there really pet detectives that exist?
There is pet detectives, and you can hire them.
Oh.
And several times lately, they found somebody's pet.
Really?
And they're saying they think Harley is not far from home.
Oh, my God.
But nobody knows where.
Well,
and people are desperate to get their puppy home.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, puppies are part of the family.
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, when you're willing to spend $500, you know that's a precious puppy.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very important part of the family for that. My gosh.
Absolutely.
Hopefully nobody's, like kidnapped him and taken off or something like that.
But we hope they haven't. You know, we have had a lot of that happen.
Seriously?
Yeah, we had that one lady, you know, that saw this dog advertised after hers went missing. And she went over here to meet the lady, and of course it was her dog.
Ooh.
And and she called the police, everything else, and she got her dog and got it home. But the people had kidnapped it, and they were going to resell it.
Wow, that's a shame when people do that.
Yeah, and I didn't even know people would do something like that.
I didn't,
because everybody around here, if they find your pet, they put it in the backyard, they post it immediately. Come get your pet, they help each other out.
Yeah, they care for it, give it food, water, things
like
that.
Oh, yeah, they'll feed it, water it, and then they'll talk about it on next door where you can find your pet. Mm. And they'll show pictures, so, you know where it is. And lots of times within hours, somebody will post, their pet's back home and thank everybody, you know, for responding and getting it home.
Yeah. Wow. Well, boy, I hope
I don't know how they all get out, but they do.
I don't know. You would think that with all the puppies that get out, you would think that people would take extra security measures and say, this is a thing. We need to, you know, make sure. Because puppies will wander off.
All should be ID. They, you know, everybody should have, you know, a microchip to every dog in town.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you just take it up the vet, and it'll tell you who it belongs to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always and I always wanted one of these, but I didn't know it was an actual thing. But apparently, they actually have them where there's like some kind of a GPS. I don't think it's a chip that they put in with like the thing, but it's like maybe something that they put on their collar, and you can pretty much find where that GPS thing is.
You can locate them real quick, yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody should have that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got an animal and you love it, you want to be able to find it if something happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that when we had our dog, we would always kind of like half joke that, you know, make sure you watch him because we don't want anybody to steal him. We were kind of kidding, but we've since found out that people actually do that, and that's a very serious thing. And it's just...
Yes, it is.
I mean, gosh, you have a member of your family like that that's, you know, missing or stolen. I mean, it's heartbreaking. It's terrible.
It is heartbreaking, and... you know, everybody usually has children, and that's even worse if their dog goes missing. I mean,
yes. You've
got everybody crying, and, you know, everybody's trying to find the dog. And so everybody should have a microchip. Like you say, if this goes on the collar, that's a good idea, too. And you can find them very quickly. And people that have stolen them, you know, you're going to locate them.
Yeah, yeah, if they don't remove, like, that GPS thing.
But they can't remove the microchip.
They cannot, no.
So that would help a lot.
Wow.
You know, well, it's permanent.
I know it. I hope they find that that dog that's missing.
Yeah, I do too, because it's been a couple of days now.
Oh, no.
And I know the pet detective, you know, was out yesterday, and they said that they believed it was close. They didn't think it had gone a long way.
Good. Hopefully. I mean, yeah, especially with that kind of heat. Oh, boy.
And they found somebody's dog the other day, and they said the bottom of the paws were really hot.
Ooh.
They'd been on the pavement a while.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And,
so
you know,
everybody's looking out for everybody's pet right now.
Yeah. It scares the puppies, too, because they're like, uh-oh, I can't find, you know, my people.
I can't find my way home.
Yeah.
And I was just going to say, they just saw a bird or something and, you know, left the yard.
Yeah, got curious just for a second, and then all of a sudden
they lose
their bearings. Gosh. Well, let me know if they find them, because, gosh, that's terrible. I hope they do.
It is.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
So how was this week? What are some of the big highlights? What are we looking at? What's going on?
Well, we're bidding on a lot of policies. We're trying to get people to make a decision. We've got a $3 million one out. We've got two smaller policies out. And one of them is, the things they like the best. So, I don't know. We've got some good fair bids out. We should get some of these, but we didn't get the ones last week. So we're just going to have to see. But we've got a lot of policies that we're bidding. I know a lot of people are waiting on policies. We won one small policy this week. We'll get that funded out for somebody. But it's really a tight market right now, really tight.
What is this just a phase, or is there?
I think it's a phase. I think a lot of people have got this expectation that they're going to get 100% on their policy all of a sudden. And I think it's the ads that's driving this.
So people trying to sell their policies, they're seeing these ads and they think, oh, wow, I can play this game. Because I know that we've been through this game before, and sometimes it's the broker that's playing the games. They'll say, oh, gosh, you know, we can jack it up more. We can get, you know, more for the policy and this and that. But if it's the owner of the policy, they may not be actually informed because they don't do this, you know, for a living, and they don't maybe understand how it works.
I think they don't really understand how it works. We're $200,000 difference on this one policy.
Oh, wow.
And the lady's saying, oh, no, I need $200,000 more. The market won't bear it, lady.
Wow.
In other words, we're at the top of the bid. We're the high bidder right now. And she wants even more. And it's not justified. You can't do it. So, they have to get real. And if they're not real, they're not going to sell their policies.
$200,000
difference. Like you said, yeah. What they're seeing is these ads that say, you can go on trips, you can do all this. We're gonna take care of you, and they believe it, that they're going to get all this money. But people will only give a certain amount. That's when it stops, and they don't realize that.
Wow. So, yeah, the ads that we talk about all the time where the people are in their RV and they're traveling around and, you know, vacationing everywhere.
Yeah, that isn't going to happen.
No.
Yeah, that's not.
Oh,
it's
wow.
not feasible. And we had a client that wanted to sell his policy, and he's up in years, but there's not a thing wrong with him. And come to find out, he's got enough cash value to carry it to another 12 years.
Oh, wow.
And he hadn't read the policy. So what if he had sold that? He would have really taken a loss.
Yeah, really.
But most of them aren't that way. Most people that come to us that want to sell their policies, you know, they know that we only buy cancer policies. If you've got cancer and it's stage four, you know, we're interested. We'll buy your policy if the premiums aren't too high and if they say you're not going to live but like 30 months. Hmm. If they say you're going to live 50 months, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And I doubt if anybody would. Because we're looking for short term, you know, that we can turn, because most of this is IRA money. And these people are getting ready for retirement. So, you know, they want something that will roll over pretty quick.
In other words, when people sell their policy, you're buying policies direct from people, the same types that you're bidding on for investors as well.
That's right. We're buying them direct. In Texas, we're a licensed provider. We can buy policies direct in Texas. We don't have to have a broker. So when they come to us, they're going to save money because there's no broker involved.
So
I don't know how many people think about that.
Yeah, I mean, you take out the middleman because there's always, you know, kind of like we were talking about a minute ago, you know, you have the broker and sometimes they will, you know, try to you know, play hardball and get more for the policies so that they can get more commission or what, however, you know, the actual process works.
Sometimes it's held up by a broker.
Yeah.
Because the broker wants more money. And he'll say, no, you don't want to sell your policy now. This isn't a good price. But what they're really trying to say is, you know, I need to get a little more money myself, and that's why I don't want you to sell it right now.
Yeah. I would imagine you probably lose some good policies just because of the broker playing games.
I think so. I think we've lost some over the years because the broker wanted more money.
Jeez.
And they come back at the last minute, well, we have to have a little more money. Well, lots of times it's the broker saying, could you give us another $5,000? You know? And the brokers make a lot of money before it ever gets to us.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, before we ever see it, the broker's already got his figured in, how much he's going to take out of the policy.
I would imagine that's
so
probably...
Some don't close and some do.
Yeah. That's got to be a pretty good chunk that the broker gets. So you eliminate the broker and you buy policies direct. I would imagine it seems like everybody would win in that situation.
It is a good win situation because we help the people out. They get the money for their cancer treatment, and there's not a broker involved, so they're going to get a lot more money. That's what it amounts to.
Yeah, yeah.
And all these people that think they're going to get 100%, they need to walk it back because they're not.
Yeah, no, it's...
Because we've been doing this a long time, and we know about what the market is and what the brokers are going to make and what the owner is going to get.
So it kind of sounds like when, say you're presented with a policy, you kind of know what would be, and I don't know if this is even the right way to say it, but like fair market, like.
Yes, we know about what the market is and what it'll stand. And when it gets too high, we back out.
Yeah.
We just say, no, that's our final bid. Lots of times they'll say, Faye, can you go up a little bit more? We say, no, that's our final bid. We'll pass.
Without getting into specifics, for like this policy that you were talking about before, that the lady wants $200,000 more. Is that a situation where you say, I'm sorry, we're going to have to back out, or we're...
Yes, we said, either she takes it like we've got it, or we're out. And if we're out, you know, we're the high bidder.
Yeah.
So then what she's going to get is going to be a lot less than what we bid it at.
Yeah.
It's not going to be more like what she wants. It's fixing to go down.
Are people who have never sold a policy before, is it almost kind of like, I don't want to say sticker shock, but is it kind of like a dose of reality or something that when they realize, oh my gosh, I can shop this around to, you know, several, you know, brokers and places, this is about what I'm going to get for it, kind of average across the board. Is it kind of like maybe a wake up call or...
It's a wake-up call when we get to the end. Mm. It's not a wake-up call till she finds out what the final amount is.
Yeah.
And she finds out that 90%, 100% is going away. It's not going to come her way. Or if it's a guy, you know, they find out the hard way. This is all the market will stand. This is what you're going to get for your policy.
Hmm. Wow.
And we always go back to Mr. Chang, you know, that wanted to go around the world, so to speak. He went to Italy, went to all these places. And we'd given him a good bid before he left. He would not sell his policies before he left. He said, no, I'm going to go do my bucket list. He did. He came back, and then he sold us the policy, and he thought he still had a lot of time. He was dead in less than 12 months.
Jeez, that's fast.
So it was fast. Things that happened to and cancer, you know, is unpredictable. A lot of people think they've got a lot of time, and maybe they do, but a lot of times it's a lot shorter period than what they were anticipating.
Yeah. I would imagine.
So they find out the hard way when they start dealing with somebody to buy their policy.
You know, in that Chan policy, I mean, I know you kind of reference that from time to time, but you were, you know, relentless. I would imagine probably a lot of people would have said, you know, this is just, we're just chasing this guy for months and months and months, and he's not calling us, and he's, you know, off in Europe, and let's just walk away, it's too much trouble. But you were relentless, you stayed onto it, you were dedicated, and then turns out he wanted to do the deal, he just had his bucket list, and... turned out it was a great policy, so you didn't give up on that.
No, but, you know, I kept thinking, this guy isn't going to do it. In the back of my mind, I'm saying, I don't believe he's ever going to do it.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize how dedicated he was to going on these trips before he did anything. And then, you know, he finally sold the policy to us, and then we still thought he had quite a bit of time. But we were both wrong. He didn't. It was faster-moving cancer than what we anticipated. But the people that we buy their policies, sometimes it'll show, let's say, 28 months, and we're bidding on it. Then they go to the doctor, and the doctor says, you don't have 28. So then they expect to get a lot more because it's a lot shorter. And sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. Then we have people that decide not to sell the policy because they tell them they don't have it 6 months. You know, after they've already had it out for bids, then they go back to the doctor, and the doctor says, you don't have that much time. So sometimes we don't get the policy if it gets real short.
Does the time frame affect not the value, but does it affect how much they will get when they sell it? Like the closer?
That's exactly right.
Wow.
Yes.
Hmm. All right. So if
they expect to get a lot more. Like if it's a 12-month policy, they're going to hold out.
Yeah.
If it's 28, 30 months, no. We can do about a standard deal. But when it gets real short, they say, look, it's 12 months, you know. And so they're going to try to hold it up on that. And everybody knows if it's that short, you know, they're going to get their money very quickly.
So when that happens, if you get, you know, say, you know, I know you've got your aggressive rate, I guess, that for lack of a better term, based on, so if it's like a, I don't know, like a 20-month policy, you may, you know, bid it semi-aggressively. But if it's like a 12-month or even maybe a 10-month, do you bid it more aggressively or knowing that it's probably going to mature faster? Or,
well, it's going to mature faster. We're not going to make as much because it's going to be fast.
Hmm.
Okay. So on a 12-month, they're probably going to make 15, 16%. They're not going to make as much as they would make. On the other, it's just short. They're going to get their money in a short length of time.
Jeez. I guess I'd never really thought about the time frame or the length of the policy and how it might affect the bidding process.
And then there's a lot of really good policies that we bid on. You know, we have the ones that we like, you know, breast cancer, stomach cancer, colon cancer. And then, you know, we did several this last year of throat cancer and esophagus cancer. And you don't get many of those. They're fast moving, but we don't get any, very many of them. And we've recently bid an ALS case, and we're real careful because we got burned on one years ago. The guy wasn't as sick as we thought. But this one that we've bid, and we don't know whether we'll get it or not, he's not only in a wheelchair, he cannot get from the bed to the wheelchair.
Oh.
They have a lift that puts him in the wheelchair and back in bed. So he's really ill. He can't move. So this one should be very fast. It's not going to be one of those long ones.
Mm. Yeah, I guess when you kind of go outside of your normal policies, there must be something really attractive about them. You've tried to do. Let's see. There was what was it a Huntington's policy?
Yes, we wanted that Huntington's disease so bad. We knew how bad Huntington's is. All the people signed up for it. If we could get it, and we did not get it. But that was a large policy. We were intent on bidding it. We bid it hard, and we just never were able to pull it off. But that was, like you say, had a lot of profit in it. It was different. We read up on Huntington's well into the night, so to speak, where we would know everything about it. And we knew that it was going to be a quick death on Huntington's.
Yeah.
We just weren't able to get it from the family.
Yeah, I would imagine probably something like that is a difficult policy to win just because it's so competitive. I would imagine it's probably attractive to a lot of people.
It was attractive, I think, to a lot of people. It was a large policy. If you remember, it was $4 million.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was a large policy. So we went to people in advance to see if they would be interested in it before we would commit to bidding on it. And everybody said yes. Everybody wanted in on it. And, you know, we were really trying to get it, but we didn't.
Yeah. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, you know, you come across a really good policy like that. That's, you know, you are. How much, I guess, nonsense kinds of policies do you actually get percentage-wise? Would you say maybe 50% are just, we're not even going to bid on this, or you think it's higher?
On the policies that we bid? Yeah, it's higher than 50%.
I'm just wondering, like, how much, I guess, you have to
win
for. Now,
last week it didn't seem that way because we didn't get any of the ones we bid last week. the ones we're bidding this week, I think we're going to get them.
Yeah.
But we bid $4 million worth of policies last week, and we did not come across with them. As I said, their expectations were just too high, and we dropped out of the bidding. But this week, we have not dropped out of any of the bids. So our bid stand is just a matter of if the people will accept them.
Hmm. You know, and it seems like it's kind of one of those things where, you know, I know sometimes that people are like, oh, we you know, put me in another policy, and it's like, okay, well, we're working on some. But, I mean, gosh, you know, just the fact that you don't I guess, sacrifice the profit margin for investors, no matter what, is a good thing because you're always looking out for the investor. You want to make sure that every policy is profitable. And if it gets to a point where it's too much and there's not really a good profit margin, then you're essentially protecting investors from bad deals.
That's right, because they have to have a good profit. They're not going to do it if it's not profitable. And there's a lot of things that go into that, you know, what we're paying for it, what the premiums are, how long it is. You know, all these things are really important. And so if it matches all that criteria, you know, we're really on it. If some of the criteria changes, then we're not going up on it. You know, we're going to say, this is all we can give. The client's got to make this much money. So then we drop out if it doesn't hold.
Yeah. And I would think that would be a good thing for investors. They would maybe appreciate that. Maybe isn't a strong enough word, but I mean, gosh, that's what it's really all about. So it is a kind of fluid thing. I mean, it changes all the time. You know, you're always looking at, you know, tons and tons of policies. Many of them people never even see because you just reject them. Sometimes I would imagine you see them right off the bat and you're like, no, I'm not even going to, you know, read this. It says right here in the title, you know, this is not even worth it. And then others, I would imagine you probably start reading the paperwork. They look attractive on the outside. But once you start getting into the details, I would imagine then there's probably sometimes you're like, yeah, there's something that's down in here that it's not right.
Well, and there's one that we've got bid right now. It said a year ago he was able to play golf. Ugh. And I said, I hope when everybody reads this, they don't think he can still play golf because he's really ill now. But a year ago, he wasn't. A year ago, the man was still able to play golf. And then all this cancer hit him. And, you know, he's been in bad shape for the last year. So all that's important. If he was still playing golf, I would say he's probably not sick enough for us to be buying the policy. But he's been in and out of the hospital, every kind of chemo, radiation. They're trying experimental drugs on him, you know, everything they can. But it's not helping. It's in his lymph nodes.
Mm.
And, you know, it's real important. If it's in your lymph nodes, it's going to spread.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so there's a lot of information that that not only you have, but investors have as well. How much of the actual data do people actually read? I know you read every word.
They read the life expectancy report. It's got every detail. But then we have got the backup that we're reading from the doctors. You know, it'll give the lab results, how many times they were in, how many surgeries they've had, what they've tried to operate on. And then lots of times they'll say it cannot be resected. They go in on the colon a lot of times. Then they find out they cannot do it, so they close them back up. And all that's in the report.
Hmm.
And with breast cancer, it starts out when they first go, what did they do the first time? And they'll just do a lumpectomy, or they don't want to take the breast off. All this is in the report. And then when you get down to it and they've been to Mexico, then I know it's a good policy. Because I personally have never seen the Mexican surgeries work or treatment. I have not.
Yeah.
Now, that's just for me. The ones we've bought, if they've been to Mexico, it's always a lot farther along when they come back.
Yeah, that's what the data shows. It's not like an opinion or a thought or a theory.
No, it's just what it shows.
Yeah.
If you go back and read all the lab reports, read the doctor reports, you'll find that out. That's what happens.
Hmm. I would imagine probably most people, after they get started, maybe they do their first policy, they read, you know, a lot more, maybe even their second policy. But I would imagine probably as people go through the process and get into like their, you know, I don't know, third, fourth, fifth policy, at that point, they're probably gotten to the point where they understand how the whole investment works. They know that based on all the preliminary things that you do, I don't want to call it the screening process, but you take in a lot of information and data. And so if the policy comes across and you tell investors that this is a good one, then they understand it. And you have some investors that have been with you so long. I would imagine if it's up for people to be in, then they just kind of like say, yes, put me in. Do you have,
they
is
do.
That kind of how
we
it
have
works?
A lot of people that way. And, you know, we're recommended by a lot of people. We had some new clients this week and they were recommended by clients that we already have.
Mm.
You know, about a month ago, we did a family out of San Antonio that came in. And it's because their relatives have been with us a long time. Their friends have been with us a long time. So, you know, they wanted in on it. And we have this happen all the time. The word of mouth, you know, people come and put their money with us because somebody else has been successful that they know that we have. And, of course, right now, we've got about $100 million invested in life policies.
Wow.
Clients have got $20 million in cash right now and to invest. And then we've got that other policy that we're waiting on And that's the one that's coming from New York City.
New York City?
New York City. We're waiting on the death certificate, and we're having trouble getting it. You know, only in New Jersey and New York do you ever have a problem. I mean, they just don't want to turn loose these things.
They're very greedy that way.
They're greedy. They've got the document. Why do they care? Why can't they just, push a button on their computer, print it out, document it, and send it to us? They don't want to do anything that simple.
Yeah.
It's just too simple for them.
It's like literally their job.
That's right. That is their job. But, I don't even know if they work every day in New York.
Oh,
I just don't know.
That could be.
We had this man in Texas that worked for a hospital. He had not been there in 15 years. And nobody ever realized he wasn't there until they were going to give him a promotion, and that's when they caught him. I mean, 15 years, folks.
Getting paid the whole time.
He would just go in and draw his check, and nobody ever caught on.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that is bad.
Yeah.
When it's that big a bank or hospital, and they don't even know you're not there.
Wow. They're still paying
him.
Oh, wow.
Paying him. He collected over $400,000 in 15 years.
Well, he didn't have to pay that back, did he? Or did he?
I don't know what they did to him. I was curious. I would think they would say, we want all that money back because you haven't even been at work in 15 years.
Yeah.
Didn't need a little of work. And I imagine he worked somewhere else during that time.
Oh, yeah. He was probably double dipping.
$20 he did. Yeah, he was double dipping. I mean, it's amazing to me.
Wow. Oh, my. I don't know where that place is, but I want to go work there or not.
Yeah, we all want to do that. I mean, getting paid and not show up.
Yeah, really. Wow. Easiest job ever. Once in a lifetime, for sure, but wow.
Once in a lifetime.
Well, what about annuities? I know, any kind of conservative investment, sometimes maybe life settlements aren't for everybody, especially as you get closer to retirement, 60s and 70s. Annuities are more attractive to that type of investor. So how are we with annuities? Bonuses still happen?
Well, annuities, as you know, first of all, they're guaranteed. Your principal's always safe with annuity. It's compound interest, and you do not pay taxes till you take it out. That's the best of all worlds. How many investments can you sit here and do other than an IRA and say, okay, my money is growing, but I'm not paying taxes? And until you start taking it out, there is no taxes. So the taxes are deferred until you take it out. And then all the bonuses right now. You can get all these bonuses, 13%. I think it's a great deal. That's $13,000 on 100, folks.
Wow.
So, it's important to have a bonus product, to have a good company. You don't want a variable annuity unless you like risk. A variable annuity, you get at the brokerage house. A variable annuity has the same risk as stock has because it has real mutual funds in it.
Yeah.
And our things, we mirror the stock market. You're never in the stock market. That's why it has a stop gap where it never goes down. So if the stock market goes down, your annuity does not go down.
But if it goes up, you still get the excitement of...
You get the excitement of the upswing every time. And if everything goes to pot at the stock market, it has a hold. It just sits there until everything goes back up. And annuities have done well the last 10, 20 years. It's not like other things. It's locked in. Every year, your interest is locked in once a year. And then we've got some programs, it's every 2 years. And a lot of people like the 2 years because it gives you a two-year average. But you can do it either 1 year at a time or 2 year at a time, but it's locked in every time. So you can't lose your interest. It doesn't go backwards. There's not any risk of any of you losing your interest or your principal. Principal's guaranteed from day one.
Is there any advantage, or does it just kind of like depend on each person? But is there an advantage to 1 year versus 2 year, or is it kind of?
Well, it's something new. The 2 year is a new deal. They've always just had 1 year, and now they're experimenting with the 2 year. And I've just done some of the 2 years. the clients don't really understand it yet. That, you know, they look down through statement, oh, I didn't get paid. Well, it's because it's the 2-year strategy instead of the one. So they have to become familiar with that, or just leave it at the 1 year, you know, if it's simpler. But annuities are paying good right now. Interest rates are coming down. You know, we had guaranteed interest rates on some short-term 5-year deals that was like 5.5.
Mm.
And all those are fixing to drop off.
Wow.
Because interest rates are coming back down. They were going up. So everybody that took advantage of the 5-year at 5.5 or 5.9, they've got it locked in for the next 5 years.
Nice. What is a good? I don't want to pigeonhole or exclude anybody, but what is a good general age range for somebody in annuities?
I would say if you're 40 years old, it's time to get an annuity.
Mm. Okay.
We've got some young people in annuities, 25 years old, that their grandparents have bought annuities for them. They've got their first jobs, but they know they're not going to have any money for years. So they put $25,000 apiece for their grandchildren in annuities.
Wow.
So that's the youngest we've got is 25 years old. But the grandparents, a lot of them have funded these where they'll have a guaranteed income that they know when they die, the grandchildren are going to be taken care of.
Can we characterize an annuity as it's one of these types of investments where you can pretty much just set it and forget it? You don't have to do
anything?
That's it.
You set it, you forget it. Once a year, you look at it. You look at your interest. You look at what it's done for the year. You can make changes or you can just let it ride, you know. Mm. And our annuity people have been with us 20-something years.
Wow.
Probably 23. And they've all stayed with annuities. They like them. They pay well. It's the only thing that you don't have people say, I'll just cash my annuity in.
And when you say, like, they can change options, was it like 13, 14 different?
There's a lot. Yes, I think there's 14 different strategies. And I'm into about 6 right now.
Oh, wow.
Strategies for people. I think it'll work. I think I've just got some people's statements as to what they made. So I think they're paying pretty well.
Cool. So regardless, whether people choose to do annuities or life settlements or both, we should mention it's not a one or the other.
You can do both.
Yeah.
And it depends on your age and how you think. Most of the people that come over and do annuities, they're coming out of the stock market or they're coming out of an IRA or a 401k and they're switching to an IRA. We have a lot of people have different reasons. Lots of people sell their business. They put it in annuity where it'll be guaranteed. And a lot of people have had CDs. I've had several people this week had CDs, brought those over. I had somebody sell their farm. They brought that over.
Mm, really?
Yeah. And like if you sell a business or you sell your farm, this is a place to be. Put it in annuity and sit back and relax the next few years. You can take 10% a year out of annuity with no penalty.
Hmm. I would imagine.
Now then, let's say you think you're going to get sick and go to a nursing home, which nobody wants to talk about. It's got a rider. You can buy this rider and put it on your annuity. And therefore, you can take everything out of your annuity and lump sum if you need to pay for a nursing home.
Really?
Yeah, it's got all kinds of things to help you out.
Hmm. And kind of since we're sort of starting to go down that road, an annuity is separate from the estate, right?
That's right. It's all by itself. It has its own beneficiaries. Like if you've got a large estate and somebody's going to need money right away after you pass away, you do some annuities and those heirs can get that money right away. They don't have to wait for probate. They don't have to wait for anything. They send in the death certificate, and the annuity company will send a check.
Boom, just like that.
As long as you're the beneficiary, it has to be in writing. Beneficiary's got to be chosen. If you want to change it, you can always change it later.
Yeah, and it can't be contested in court. Nobody can.
No, it's not going to be any of that.
Yeah, nice. All
right. It's not like contesting a will.
Yeah.
That's different.
Yeah. All right. So it's pretty much set in stone, and there you go. So I would imagine.
That's right. It's set in stone, and it's ready, and something happens to you later, people can't change it.
Nice. Well, that's got to make people feel good that, you know, there won't be some internal fighting and there won't be this court drama that goes on for years and years and years. Just get it done, get it over with. It pays out, and that's that. So.
And remember, a power of attorney dies when you do. I've had people come and say, I've got their power of attorney. It doesn't mean anything. They're dead, and that power of attorney is dead. The will takes over or the trust takes over after you pass away. So if it's a trust, you've got trustees, they will settle the estate. If it's a will, whoever is in charge of the will settle it.
Good point.
There's got to be somebody in charge on each one. It's either the will, whoever you've put in charge of the will, whoever the beneficiary is, that's going to be the one that handles it. If it's a trust, you've got a trustee, and the trustee is going to handle everything.
So it just depends on what stage it's
That's
in.
Right, which what you've done. If it's a large estate, you probably have a trust, maybe more than one trust. Or if it's a will, whoever you put in charge of your will.
All right. Well, that's good to know.
Power of attorney is dead with you.
And then it moves into...
That's right. Then the legal, whatever you've done legally, is going to settle it.
All right. Well, good. You know, some people do, or if they don't, they should. Make sure that everything is buttoned up. It's good to review these things from time to time, just to kind of make sure that everything is set the way
and
you want it.
If you change beneficiaries, it's got to be in writing. You can't just say, three times, I don't want Aunt Millie to get this. You can't do that. It's got to be in writing.
It's not like Beetlejuice.
That's right. And, lots of times people come back, well, I know I was supposed to get the farm. I know it was going to be mine. Or I was going to get the townhouse. Or I was going to get the ranch. It's got to be in writing, folks. It can't be they said to you in passing, I'm going to leave that to you.
Yeah.
Lots of times they will story to you and tell you you're in the will and you're not. Yeah. They'll tell you you're going to get this and you're not getting it.
Yeah, yeah, just to maybe keep the peace, while they're around.
That's right. And then I've seen people say, I know they wanted me to have that jewelry. And right after the funeral, they're in there trying to get the jewelry.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you got to put a stop to all that, Until you've read the will, you don't know who gets everything. Or if it's the trust, whoever's in charge of the trust will tell you who's going to get everything. And they'll send out written letters, or they may have you come into the attorney's office if it's a large estate.
Yeah. Boy,
and we've had people steal the trust. There's a big lawsuit out on the other side of Midland, and this man had these nephews, and they were bad. And they knew where the trust was in the safe. They got in the safe, stole the trust out.
Really?
Yeah, where they could make a few changes. And they're going, everything's ours. And everybody's going, where is that dadgum trust?
Wow.
And so they've had a lawsuit. I think it was going on 5 years.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that'll suck up all the resources in a hurry.
That's going to take care of a lot of the money.
It'll go to the attorney.
Can you imagine somebody stealing the trust?
No, I can't.
I never heard of that in my lifetime.
I was a little shocked when you said that. I'm like, oh, that's a thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of little greedy people out there.
Yeah. I'm sure we all know some. I know several.
Yeah, they're just trying to get what they don't have coming.
Yeah. Well, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-5330. Should I repeat that?
Yeah, probably.
877-588-3330. And our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
I think there was a few extra numbers in there the first time.
I know. I just was going to add to it, see if anybody could figure that out.
Make it like a puzzle. It's a game. So every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic today?
Going to be Stubbs barbecue sauce. Stubbs barbecue sauce. Christopher Stubblefield. He's born in 1931 in Navasota, Texas. Mm. He was one of 12 kids. His mother and father picked cotton for a living. He picked cotton as a young kid, but they moved to Lubbock. His dad was a Baptist preacher, and they moved in the 30s. His son worked at restaurants, hotels. He grew up to be a big kid, 6'5". He got married at 16 years old. Can you imagine?
Really?
He had three children. Then he went to the Army. He went from picking cotton, to doing all this other. He went in the U.S. Army, and he got hurt. He was a staff sergeant, a gunner in the Korean War. He served in the 96th Field Infantry Battalion, which was all black. And when he got hurt, they put him over there in the mess hall. And so he became a mess sergeant. And he loved cooking. He prepared meals for up to 10,000 soldiers every day.
Wow.
He got an honorable discharge in 67. He came back to Lubbock. He had two Purple Hearts and a deep knowledge of cooking. And he opened his first restaurant in 1968. But he wasn't a businessman, didn't know anything about business, was literally messing it up. His barbecue restaurant was a little bitty place there in Lubbock. Had fit 75 people in it. And so he was making homemade barbecue sauce. He had a blues music jukebox. And he said no loud talk or no bad talk in his place. And all these people that became famous would come there on Sunday night. They would jam there with him. Stevie Ray Vaughan was there. Joe Ely was there. Muddy Waters.
Really?
Linda Ronstadt, Johnny Cash played there. Everybody knew him. And they all just paid for tips and food. He became well known, but he couldn't make it. He couldn't make a living. He was a great cook, but he wasn't a good businessman. And so lots of times when he was just down to it, didn't have any money, his friends would have him take some jars, put his barbecue sauce in it, and they'd go out on the street and sell it just to get him some money, just to keep the restaurant going. And finally, he lost the restaurant. The IRS shut him down. So he moves to Austin. And he wasn't very good there. And in 89, he had a heart attack. And so everything was happening to him. They said, well, bottle up some of that barbecue sauce, and we'll go out and sell it. And the country singer, Joe Ely, his wife said, I'll buy some of it for friends. Everybody was helping him. Everybody was trying to help him pay his bills because he was so unsuccessful. And so they would hand bottle the sauce in old jam jars, whiskey bottles. They'd use jalapeno peppers as corks. and then they'd put an auto book in it called Stubbs Blues Cookbook Cassette. They were just trying to sell this stuff. They didn't know what they were doing. One of his friends went on David Letterman and told him about it. And he said, well, let me have some of that. And, they weren't making a living. The ingredients were at retail prices. And then his friend, Joe Ely, performed with David Letterman. And he bought a bottle of Stubbs barbecue. And Letterman loved it. And he said, I want Stubbs to come on my show.
Wow.
So he goes to California. And he didn't know who Letterman was at the time, but he accepted the invitation. And he watched the show for 3 weeks to learn about David Letterman. When showtime arrived, Stubb turned on the charm, and he spent 6 minutes cooking for the staff and then cooked for the audience. And Letterman said, I love this. And he said, I want to buy this barbecue sauce. So if it hadn't been for David Letterman, nobody would have ever known about his sauce, and he would have stayed broke. So then they started packaging it. His barbecue restaurant took off, but he was doing this. He would take a big batch of barbecue sauce and a 60-gallon cooker and use a paddle boat oar to make it. That's how.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
I can.
You talk about a hand. They were doing it. But the later that year, everybody found out about it. Business changed. He was making money. So they moved the production to a plant in Dallas. And he started buying ingredients wholesale instead of retail. And he would do a small batch, and then he found out he could do a large-scale deal. And so he had two full-time salespeople, and after the initial failed attempts to sell directly to stores, they started working with distributors. And the sales jumped to 100,000, and by 1994, 700,000. And so then they put chicken and pork marinades in, and all these other spicy barbecue sauces. And then he was hitting the trade shows and showing it everywhere. So, it was amazing when it really took off. And then in 1995, he passed away.
Oh.
And but he had the heart problems, had all this other, back to 1989. But now it's famous. It's everywhere. Everywhere you look, you can find Stubbs barbecue sauce, and it's famous now, and it's probably one of the best barbecue sauces around.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to go into a store without seeing a whole section of it there.
I know, and they've got so many flavors.
Yeah,
and his kitchen surpassed 7 million over what it's done. Can you imagine?
Wow!
So there's no telling what it makes now.
Jeez, it's just, you kind of hear the progression, and it's like, it's one of those kind of classic stories that's really inspiring. It's like, he starts out small, and then it kind of like wavers, may go out of business, and had some trouble,
yeah.
And and then some people started to come in, and then it got some people's attention, and then some time goes by, and then it kind of circles back to a connection he made like several years ago, and then ends up on TV, and then it's so strange. I mean, nobody in their right mind could have planned it to go that way.
No.
But yeah, the impossible happened.
And if it hadn't been for the Joe Ely going on television, it would have never happened.
Yeah.
But McCormick paid $100 million for it in 2015.
Really?
I mean, this started out so humbly in Lubbock, Texas. They paid $100
million.
Wow. And the sales were $30
million. Wow. A guy that just started in a mess hall.
In a mess hall, learning to cook, cooking for soldiers. And it still shows a picture of Stubbs on every barbecue sauce.
Yeah,
isn't that amazing?
That is cool.
If he could have lived to have seen this, it would have been a unique experience. A guy that was that poor, that rose up through poverty, to do it, and couldn't get a break. And then he got the break, of course, on David Letterman, and that's what made him.
Yeah, you go through all this process, and it's like you can't get a break, for nothing, and then all of a sudden something happens out of nowhere. It's so,
yeah, just and I never changed his recipes. His recipes were true, they worked, they were great recipes, and it's just gotten better. If he could have only seen what his recipes turned out to be,
yeah. And then it sold for $100 million.
$100 million. I mean, who could have topped that?
I know it. Wow, that's awesome. Boy, that gives you a whole nother appreciation. Of course, anything to do with food and barbecue, I'm all over it. But boy, that gives you a whole nother. Next time I see a bottle, I'll double think it.
Double think that.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the best barbecue sauces this side of Kansas City.
Yeah.
But can you imagine a young boy growing up picking cotton, goes to the Army, starts cooking for all these men And the idea was great. The sauce was great. He just couldn't get a break there for a while. That little old place in Lubbock looks so bad. You know, little old tiny shack looking deal. But look at all the singers that passed through it.
Yeah.
They all became friends with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, they all tried to help him out. They sell this sauce just to pay the rent for him. You know, he just couldn't get a break.
Wow.
And like they said, he wasn't a businessman. He was a great cook. His ideas were really right on up there. But as a businessman, he wasn't worth a darn.
Wow. And now Stubbs Barbecue Sauce worth, you know, bajillions of dollars. So.
$1 billion.
Yeah.
And all thanks to him.
That is so cool. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
All right. Before I run out and grab some barbecue sauce,
yeah.
with a life settlement, there are two risks. What is the first one?
The first risk is the premiums. If it goes over, you would have to pay premiums. So always know what your premium is in advance. And, of course, that's all on that one page. You know, when you sign up for your contract, it tells you what the face amount is, what you're going to make. It tells you if it goes over. It tells you everything you need to know. It tells you who the person is, what the cancer is. Everything's on that page. So that's really something you need to read. The other thing is it is not liquid till it matures. So everybody should know that. You don't get paid halfway or a third of the way. You get paid when it matures.
Okay. And somebody does need to be accredited in order to do a life
settlement. They must be accredited. They must make $200,000 a year, or they must be worth $1 million, and that's without their home.
Okay. And I guess guidelines or standards for annuities are not quite as rigid?
They're not that strict. You can't put up all your money and not have any money in the bank. That's a simple rule for anybody. So you need to have, you know, money in savings or checking, other investments where that you don't have to cash in your annuity. They don't want someone to take out an annuity and 6 months later they're broke and have to cash it in. That's silly.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to be down to your last $50.
No, and we would not do that. We're not ever going to do that.
Cool. All right. So for people to get started or get more information, I assume it's business as usual this coming week, yes?
That's right. We'll be doing appointments.
Cool. Then people do need to call to schedule something, make an appointment, come talk to you, get started, whatever they want to do. And so finally, one last time, Faye, what is your phone number?
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. And there's a lot of good things on the website.